This is the Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We're on remote, naturally, during this pandemic, but I'm with Jesse Alexander, and he is known for his vital, animated poetry. And so, Jesse, say hi with an opening poem, please.
Sure. Thanks a lot. I'm really glad to be here. I'm going to open with a relatively new poem called Anthem. On the tip of your tongue, in the hum of your mama rocking you, the first thing in the morning of all your mornings, the last verse of the last hymn sung into the ear of your nights, the warm cup of cocoa in a winter cabin, safe in a storm, by yourself, but not alone. The quad circle chant in the yard, clearing in the woods, the church stomp, ancient as a baby cry, the drum, the leathery smile of granddad, the well-earned crow's feet of grandma.
That is Jesse Alexander, and what a great introduction to your life and to your work. Family, that is absolutely wonderful. I love that poem.
Thank you.
And the list, I think it's important for people to hear that you listed those things. And what did you get from doing that, Jesse?
Well, this poem is funny. I'm thinking about writing a book called Anthem, and I was trying to play around with ideas. And sometimes the conscious mind, my conscious mind at least, has a whole bunch of things floating around in it. But what I find works the most for me is to start simple. Start with what is at the core.
Mm.
What is on the tip of your tongue? What would your mother hum to you when she's rocking you? That's the anthem. Every one of us has that. This poem, everyone has that poem inside of their heads right now. That is the core of who you are.
That is such good advice, because people agonize about being profound or to writing a relic. But you know, you're telling us the thing that's in the front of your mind is in tune with your real vibration. That is such good advice. I want to tell them who you are, which is pretty fascinating, because your resume starts by saying you're a teacher, apprentice griot, perpetual ABC Darien, old bellhead, wireless systems engineer, hacker, window through which the great I am shines, poet. That is so true. And I want to focus in on this electrical engineering, which you've mastered. In fact, you have a master's degree in it. How does an electrical engineer write poetry? What do they have to do with each other?
Well, that's interesting. I actually have written poems back and forth between my engineering self and my poet self. And what do they have to do with? They're both creative processes. That's at the core.
Really?
They're both creative processes. And in both cases, there are sets of rules. And in both cases, you have to be aware of the rules in order to break them sometimes.
I like
or
that.
Or to build on top of them. But you have to know that there are rules.
Hmm.
So poetry, you know, engineering is based on the laws of physics. But good engineers are trying to extend the laws of physics or to see how far we can go and that kind of thing. And so most of the engineering stuff I did was for Bell Labs, and most of it had to do with communications, which is, and in this case, wireless communications. I was privileged to be part of the team that helped start the whole cellular telephone network that we all know and love so much and use so much with our cell phones.
Oh, Jesse, that is, I'm so glad a poet had a hand in that. It makes me feel so much more secure. But electrical engineering is also unlike poetry because it is rigid. And I think poetry is fluid. But I think the fact that you say they're both creative is very interesting to me.
Yeah. So engineering is, it's actually kind of fluid. Engineering, I don't know, you know, the closest thing I could think about in terms of poetry is that there's a conversation. A poet is conversating with their reader. Engineers conversate with each other to create things. And a lot of it is heavily visual. And a lot of my poetry is also heavily visual.
Yes, let's hear some more. This is Jesse Alexander, and he is going to light up your life today. I'm Grace Cavalieri.
Okay, I'm going to read the poem Hunger Won. This poem won second place in the FAO Hunger Zero contest that was created and conceived by Hiram LaRue, another poet who's one of those poets out there who does all kinds of great things. So let me read Hunger One. Hides with you after 1 a.m. between guard shifts. Trying to doze in the back seat of your mom's old blue CRV. Good sleeping car, she said. Rear seats fold down. Her goodbye factory hands pressing your cheeks. Parked under sodium light in the back of the chemistry building lot, next to the dumpster with the half-eaten McDonald's other students throughout. Sneaks into your dorm room, almost prank-like, when your mama's check runs out before the end of the month, midway into the semester. Demanding choices, am selfish. Study me instead of physics. Nurse me instead of biology. Pay me your undivided attention. Cross your arms over your growling stomach. Curl up. Try to close your eyes and wait for morning.
I think it should have been first place. That was a national, I must say, that was a very competitive event. Hundreds and hundreds of poems were entered, and you should be really, well, you should admire yourself a little bit for coming in the top of that heap. But you know, the great thing about your work is that you don't start with trying to be profound. You really start with Jesse Alexander, here I am, this is what's happening to me. And it turns out to be profound. I wish we could teach beginning poets that.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think this particular poem, there are elements of it that I did experience. There are elements of it that are not my experience, mm-hmm. that I imagined. And so I think it's important to be true even when you imagine. Be true to your imagination.
Mm.
And then when you stick with that, you know, it comes out, the profoundnessness comes out. It shows. I think there's too much effort. You know, it's funny. I'm a sci-fi fan, too. And I'm thinking of Yoda saying to Luke, I think in the first series of Star Wars, don't try, do. Do. Write it. Write the poem. The profound aspects of it will come out. In fact, your readers, I find, will tell you what the profound stuff is. You know, your poem meant such and such, and you're like, oh, really? Okay, thanks. You know?
I always tell my students that it's all fiction, but the feelings, so they don't have to worry about disclosing private things, because if the feelings are true, we can adorn it a little bit. With, as you say, there's some fiction in this, in your award-winning poem, and there is much fact, but we're allowed to put those together, and mm-hmm. that, my friend, is called art, I think. Now, you have won another poem, which was really a big deal, and that was the Allen Ginsberg Award, given by the Patterson Review, our wonderful Maria Gillen, and we would love to hear that poem.
Okay, sure. Let me read this. I really appreciate my Jersey folks, and it was great working with her. And this was so exciting that this poem won, was a finalist, that is. This is the poem, Highway to Heaven, New Jersey. I thought I saw Jesus one morning in East Hanover on River Road. He was driving a loud, rusted brown 1987 Chevy station wagon with the bent front license plate wedged in the windshield. He had forgotten to put the rubber band in, and his hair was nut brown and thinning, framing his gaunt, pale face and falling upon his narrow shoulders. But then I thought that he couldn't have been Jesus, Because the day before, Jesus was driving a brand new candy red Dodge 4x4 with Buy American bumper sticker and a transparent picture of a little white boy with evil eyes pissing on something in his rear view window. Jesus gave me the finger between gear shifts, and I thought I lipped red inward in my rear view mirror after I cut in front of him to take the Eisenhower Parkway exit off 280 West. Of course, he couldn't have been Jesus, because last week I saw Jesus with his New York Yankee cap on backwards over his limp, grimy brown hair. He was driving a green Mack dump truck with Pizzullo in big red and white letters on each side. The truck that cut me off on the Garden State Parkway North, the truck that dropped a rock that took a bad hop and made the sound like a gunshot when it dug a deep dent in the roof of my 1997 Subaru. That's when I realized that he couldn't have possibly been Jesus, because I remember that Jesus was driving that well-manicured boot-black BMW 528i with MD plates. And he was talking on his cell phone to his dad, I figured, because he was gesturing angrily with his left hand off the wheel when he almost sideswiped me as he swerved across three lanes to take the Morristown exit off 287 South. Oh, God, I hope he wasn't Jesus, because he was so busy doing his great works that he didn't even notice that he almost drove this little black Christian off the road and into heaven.
Jesse, when you sent that to me, you said, I hope that you won't be offended. And I thought, well, this is really a poem of devotion.
Yeah.
Now, how is that happening?
How is it happening?
How do you see that? I see reverence. I mean, it is very humorous. You're not going to go to hell, I promise. But I do see a deep religiosity. And tell us, where are you in relation to that poem?
Well, this poem was written almost 20 years ago. And I used to drive. So here's how poetry and engineering intersect. I used to drive back and forth to Bell Labs in Whippany, New Jersey. And I lived in between East Orange and Montclair, New Jersey. And those people from New Jersey know those places.
Are you born in New Jersey?
No, I was born in the People's Republic of Brooklyn.
Okay. Just wanted to check. I'm from Trenton. Continue, please.
Oh, okay. All right. So you know exactly where I'm talking about. So I used to drive back and forth. And honestly, I think the first stanza of the poem came to me and I snickered to myself, you know. And then I went home and it's one of these things, you start with a line and you think, oh, that's funny. And then you keep going. And I kept going and kept going. And this poem is what ended up as a result. And I remember reading it at the event at the college. And it was, you know, of course, the people in the audience were laughing. They're cracking up because they know these places and they know these people. And there is reverence, and there's also silliness, and also, I think, like you said, misdirection, and also struggle with what people think God looks like, you know, and
you take some risks. I think you take some risks there,
absolutely,
which is very important. I mean, if we don't have that, we don't really have any sparks at all. You say you got some things from your mother and your father. My storytelling mother taught me how to love a song for the song's sake. And my civil engineer father taught me to appreciate the structure in all things. So you came in blessed. You came in with a toolbox, Jesse.
Yes, ma'am, I did.
And you have done many innovative things in the world of poetry and elsewhere. Some of them I need explanation about.
Sure.
For instance, you did something called the three-part harmony cento. First of all, what is a cento and what is GitHub?
Well, cento is a poem, as I understand it. It comes from the art world. The term comes from the art world. And I think it started in France. And a group of artists would start a drawing. One of them would start a drawing and they would draw something and then pass it to the next person and they would add something and pass it to the next person. And eventually you'd have this beautiful piece of work that was worked on by multiple people. So in this context, a cento is a poem that was worked on by multiple people. This was a project from the U.S. Department of Arts and Culture, which is not really a federal government agency. It's actually a nonprofit organization that does all kinds of great things in this country to bring art and poetry and that kind of thing into the world and that kind of thing. So it was sponsored by them, and we held it at Three Part Harmony Farm. And basically, as people were coming to celebrate the farm, I asked them to contribute a piece, a stanza to a poem. I wrote the first stanza, and then the other people came in and wrote subsequent stanzas, and that's how the cento got started. So that's one thing.
What fun.
Yes. Lots of fun, lots of fun. And the whole theme was envisioning the future of the farm and farming in general. And so that was a blast. I had a great time with that. And the folks who came and contributed also had a great time as well. Now, GitHub is something altogether interesting. GitHub is a I could, the best way I could describe it is online software for developing software. It's a system of where people can actually do community development
Oh my.
and contribute to mostly open source projects and that kind of thing. And there have been of late some people looking at using it as a place to publish content, including poetry and writing and instructions and mostly technical writing and that kind of thing. But I decided to experiment with using it to publish poetry. And that's basically what I did. I used a free account and set everything up, and it will automatically set up a website for you. And then I uploaded the poem to that website. And I think I also produced a PDF, and you can go and download it. I must apologize, I don't have the URL at my fingertips right now.
Maybe if they Google your name,
Yes.
Jesse N. Alexander, we might get more about you than you wish for us
Yeah,
to
that's
know.
probably
But
true.
Jesse, the reason I say it's scary is because I don't have your technical expertise, but I do want to hear another poem,
Okay.
and I want them to know that you have been out in the community doing a lot of things. You have read at Evil Grin, the Davies Memorial Unitarian Universalist Church, the Knitting Factory, Groove Drops, the Sumai Multidisciplinary Center. Your work has been in Free Black Space, Content and Code for those living in the Black, Obsidian. I'm just listing them because it sounds like one long poem, your life. And now let's hear another poem. This is the poet and the poem from the Library of Congress on remote. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and Jesse Alexander is our guest.
Okay, I'm going to read the poem Sorcerer Apprentice. And it's no, when I'm reading this, I'd like to have Miles Davis Sorcerer playing in the background. So just imagine that. And it's dedicated to my mother, Yektav, and Margaret Walker. What kind of mother would let you make a mess in her sunlit Silver Spring kitchen? Food coloring and water and plastic containers all over the table and onto the floor. And you with furrowed brow and yellow rubber gloves too big for your hands, busy making formulas to ward off monsters from outer space, of course. What kind of mother would take you to Museum of Natural History, to Hayden Planetarium, to Bronx Zoo, just to see your eyes pop wide open, then take you to museum shop, buy you golden plastic brontosaurus and rocks and minerals kit, and a leather-covered magnifying glass to better wonder with? What kind of mother would listen patiently to your theories about how electricity powered Ezekiel's wheels way, way up in the middle of the air? What kind of mother would tolerate and clandestinely finance your Heathkit ham radio, wires all over the bedroom floor and out the window, your first car, mustard brown Hornet with steering column stick shift, your dreams hidden in under bed cigar box, all your baby teeth you shed, all the poems you banged out on that antique mechanical typewriter? my kind.
Did she ever hear that poem?
Not this one. No, she had been gone. She's with the ancestors by the time I wrote this one.
She hears it. She hears it, Jesse.
Oh, I know. She's all
They take it. Our they take the program. They do. This goes way up there.
Good.
That is a great homage to a mother. You really paint a portrait. Were you the only child?
No, I'm one of four, believe it or not. I'm the oldest. I got two sisters and a brother right now who's, you know, in the hospital, and our prayers are going up for him. You know, these are tough times, but yeah, I'm one of four. I'm the oldest.
But she had the time for you. That is really something, these poems of yours. Let's hear another.
Okay, sure. I'm going to do one of my more recent ones. I'm going to take a risk. And I'm going to read my poem called John Lewis. Number one, that Alabama smirk in that Mississippi mugshot, that there is the arc of justice. Two, the man is only as good as his word, coming out the mouth of a Georgia white teenager suspended from her high school for taking disobedient photograph of a crowded hallway of unmasked children. She smirks to the interviewer and answers questions with good trouble. See, you're only as good as the word.
Jesse, that should be published everywhere. We are so aware of John Lewis today more than ever before that... Is it available? Is that poem already in print?
Not yet. Not yet. I'm happy to send offers.
You know, it's
send it out.
Well, that's right. Anyone listening here that has a magazine, that should be read because it is so sweet in its simplicity. Other people are giving grandiose speeches about John, which he deserves. Mm-hmm. But for you to take it to the halls of that Georgia girl who said, used his words, good trouble, shows that the mantle is being carried.
Yes, yes.
The mantle is being carried.
Yes.
And so is yours. So let's hear more poetry. This is Jesse Alexander, and I am Grace Cavalieri. We're on The Poet and the Poem.
All right, let's see. I'm going to read one about me when I was little. Joy for the little brown boy in the black and white photograph. I will tell you. Back when you were too small to know better. It's a shiny black Christmas locomotive, bigger than your hand, humming in circle after circle around and around the track. Your heart sings, your face opens, bursting again, again.
There's the electrical engineer starting out. And you know, when you mention a Heath kit, well, do I ever remember that
oh,
with my
really?
Husband? Are they still in? It does. It would not be in existence anymore.
No,
right?
They're out of business. They're out of business.
But that was with the woofers and tweeters.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The woofers and tweeters, and I have a poem somewhere. I don't have it at my fingertips, but I have a poem about meeting an engineer. It's a little long, about meeting an engineer in ham radio circles who worked for Heathkit, and his story I thought was hilarious. He said that Heathkit had this situation where you can return kits that you messed up, that you broke or missoldered or whatever, and they would happily, you know, for fee repair them for you and send them back. And he said almost all of the kits they got back for repair were from electrical engineers.
Well, that says a lot.
Everybody else assumed that this was new. Building a kit, working on electronics was all new. So they followed the instructions to the letter. Double E's looked at the instructions like, oh, I know better. And they would just, you know, mess it up.
So double E's better get up on their soldering.
Exactly.
That's a good story. Now give us a good poem.
Okay, let's see. I'm going to read, I call it gratitude poem. It's relatively recent. It starts off with a postscript here. Many wondrous things happen to me, but not by me. And that is by Colonel retired George W. Alexander, my uncle, who is no longer with us. I received many gifts, although I did not know them by their correct names. At the time of their offering, take this poem. I so wish she were mine, but she arrived whole, grown, and said, like Mrs. Green in Montclair High School English class, "Now you write."
What is your process for writing poetry? Do you have a discipline, Jesse, where you wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, or you sit on the porch, or you give yourself a goal, or do you wait until the muse kisses you on the cheek? What is your process?
Well, it's funny. My process is most of the time I wake up with the best material. I wake up. There's something in my head, a phrase, and I've got a nice pad that my wife bought for me that I keep by the bed, and I just try and scroll it down as much as I can before it all fades. And that's to me, that's where the best work comes from. Now, I have written things on spec. What I mean by, I actually had someone say, write me a poem, and I wrote her a poem. This is a long time ago. So I have done some spec work. I have done some things that I planned out and worked on them just to see what happened. But most of the time, I get a lot, most of my material, I get, like I said, I wake up with it in my head and I try and scroll it down. Some of it is eavesdropping on other people's conversations and turns of phrase, or I'll even eavesdrop on myself, if that makes sense. And I say, "Oh, that's pretty nice. I like that." I'm just and write that down, and then see what progresses out of that. Just like you said, I think I've heard people say that you write a poem to get to the poem. In other words, the first things are just sort of grunts and screams, and then. You get, then the poem starts to crystallize. That's the way I see it. The poem starts to come together after you get through the grunts and the screams and that kind of thing.
Well, we are going to give you a chance to prove it with a final poem.
Okay, I'm going to read this poem. It's called Burning the Boats, and it's a Maryland poem for Yuktov and Lucille Clifton. Burning the Boats. Thank you. O ship Jesus, for burning so deliciously, the forest bay shoreline at our backs. O sweet offering of defeats, so pleasing our broad nostrils soar. Thank you for dying, rising in red and yellow embers, trading on the new east winds. Home can only be ahead of us.
The voice of Jesse Alexander. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivada Foundation of the Logan Family and the Sinipet Fund, with support from Maryland Humanities and the National Endowment for the Humanities. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our engineer is Mike Turpin.